thanks, Conrad, for joining me. Catch us up briefly on what's played out in the trial so far. It began in early September, right?
That's right. So the prosecution has brought conspiracy charges, basically that being a crime of an agreement. And the conspiracy is to prevent federal employees from doing their jobs at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. And so all the prosecution needs to prove is basically that there was an agreement by two or more people. They put on a case that lasted about 3 weeks. And the case was divided into four different parts. They kind of talked about the lead up to the occupation. They talked about the occupation itself. They talked about the arrest. There was a very high-profile arrest, if you might recall, back in January,
right,
where one of the occupiers was killed by law enforcement. And then they talked about the aftermath and sort of the kind of how the community has been dealing with since then.
Well, Ammon Bundy is represented by Marcus Mumford, who's a rather flamboyant attorney, but his brother Ryan is representing himself. What are the implications of this?
Ryan Bundy and his brother Ammon Bundy, they have a joint defense agreement. So a lot of their legal work they're doing together. You know, when you're representing yourself, you're acting as your own attorney in the case. And so you get to speak in the courtroom regularly through court proceedings as opposed to just being on the witness stand. And, you know, you saw basically Ryan Bundy asking his brother Ammon Bundy questions when Ammon Bundy took the stand.
It doesn't sound like there's this divide and conquer sort of thing.
No, there has really not been kind of this divide and conquer. And if anything, a lot of the defendants, there's seven on trial right now, there has not been a lot of trash talking. I mean, a lot of people have really been doubling down, you know, on acknowledging that, yes, you know, I did the things that I've been charged with. I put signs up. I changed the names of the refuge from the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge to the Harney County Resource Center. That was something that happened during the occupation. Mm. You've just heard a lot of more agreement and kind of almost a political protest taking place during the trial, at least the defense's portion of the trial.
Looking at the OPB website, you guys were saying that it's like there are two conversations going on. And what that led me to think about was that the Bundys and the occupiers, their supporters, really don't believe in or acknowledge the laws of the United States by which they are being tried. They consider themselves sovereign citizens. And so they sort of go by different kinds of laws. How is that being reconciled in this trial?
I don't know if they actually are really seeing themselves as sovereign citizens. I mean, that's sort of almost a different animal. I mean, these guys see themselves very much so as pro-federal government, pro-government. This is not an anarchy organization. They just don't think that the federal government has the legal right, the constitutional right, to own land at all, unless it's for very specific purposes. They constantly cite Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution, called the Enclave Clause of the Constitution, and it says in so many words that the federal government can only own land for things like forts and dockyards, and when they do, they have to get permission from the states and they have to purchase it, and that's the only context in which you can have any sort of federal land outside of Washington, D.C., What they're ignoring is the property clause, which has been interpreted by the Supreme Court to allow for things like national parks and national monuments, the BLM, U.S. Forest Service land. And so it's sort of a disagreement about the read of the Constitution.
That's where the two different conversations are going on.
There are two different conversations going on, too, in the trial, in that, you know, the prosecution has alleged a conspiracy charge. They put on their case saying, you know, there was an agreement to prevent federal employees at the refuge from doing their job. People carried guns in furtherance of that conspiracy. There was some theft of government property. But the defense has definitely put on their own case in refuting a lot of those charges or attempting to refute a lot of those charges. But in doing so, they're telling their own story. You know, I mean, they're talking about the fact that they believe what they were doing is protected by the First Amendment. It was a political protest. The federal government doesn't have the right, in their view, to own land, and that the presence of firearms is something that was protected by the Second Amendment. And this is You know, it's just, in Oregon, you're allowed to protest while open carrying. And so really, you know, they were working within laws, and they were doing what many, many Americans have done throughout history in protesting their federal government when they believe their federal government has overreached. So it is two very different conversations taking place, and the jury is hearing two kind of, I don't know, almost two narratives in a way, and the jury will have to reconcile that.
Conrad, one interesting part of Ammon Bundy's testimony was on day two, I think. It was when he talked about how he was acting on a message from God, and then how Congressman Greg Walden said that while he didn't support the Bundy's occupation of the Malheur Refuge, he understood how they felt. Can you talk about the significance of this? It seems like what the congressman said validated Bundy's belief that he was doing God's work.
Well, I mean, Bundy did say that he did believe he was responding to God's will. It really relates back to standing up for the Hammond family. It's a ranching family in Harney County.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kind of got this whole thing started. Ammon Bundy tried to show that he tried every other way possible to get his message out there. He tried talking to lawmakers. He did this thing called the redress of grievances, which you have to go back to Revolutionary War times to fully grasp.
Jeez.
But he was trying to show that, you know, he tried everything other than occupying a wildlife refuge to get attention for this. And so he was sort of forced to do it in his view. And when he saw Congressman Greg Walden on the floor of the U.S. House giving a speech talking about the frustrations with so many people who work the land and the agricultural community, with ranchers and people in rural America feeling that the federal government isn't listening to them. You know, Ammon Bundy, for him, I mean, he just said, this is working. Like, I have been unsuccessful until now, and now people are finally starting to listen to my message.
OPB described this trial as a high-stakes trial. What's at stake?
A lot of seeds from the Malheur Refuge date back to the 2014 standoff in Bunkerville. And a lot of people believe that if there had been a stronger response by the federal government at that point, something like the Malheur Refuge occupation would not have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So a conviction here brings them a lot of momentum into a trial next year, the Bunkerville trial, in putting down something that began a couple of years ago. And it also is sort of a response in which many feel the government needed to have at the time, back in 2014.
How long is the trial expected to go on?
Well, it's coming to a fast close. I mean, the defense is going to rest very soon. Then the prosecution will put on a rebuttal case, kind of refuting some of the evidence that came up during the defense's case. Then we have closing arguments, and then the case goes to the jury.
Conrad Wilson of Orkin Public Broadcasting, former KDNK news director, thanks very much for talking with me.
You're welcome, Amy. Good to talk to you.
That does it for this week's News Brief on KDNK. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.